there's no place like home for the holiday.
Goblins lurking in shadows, edge haunting, whispers creep through the trees, yeah, yeah. Jack-o'-lanterns and chilling dread, ghostly figures dance through the breeze, yeah, yeah. Spirits roam the night, terrors deny. Halloween's spectacular fear ignites. With every corner's turn, shadows yearn for screams and chills in the autumn.
Welcome back to another episode of Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon.
And I'm Jeff Searcy. And Jay Logsdon, for the third week in a row, you are once again gravely mistaken.
No, we just do Christmas horror movies. There's nothing special going on. This is just a regular standard episode.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Jay. Oh, my mistake. Oh, wait. No, your mistake again. It's the 2024 Horror for the Holidays Halloween Spooktacular, Jay.
It is, in fact.
Week three.
We're plugging along. We'll see if we make it 5 weeks at this rate.
No.
after this movie and the previous one. Oh, boy. Mm. Terrifier 1 and Halloween 3. Well, that one's great, actually. Better deliver.
Delivery,
because we've had some we've had some rough ones here. I don't have much else to say. I don't have any preamble for this.
I got a preamble for it, Jay.
All right,
I heard you were saying that Pumpkinhead ain't nothing.
He ain't
nothing to cross, you said. I'd spit in Pumpkinhead's face if I saw him in real life.
I would.
Well, I got something to tell you, Jay. You should keep away from Pumpkinhead, unless you're tired of living. His enemies are mostly dead. He's mean and unforgiving. Laugh at him and you're undone, but in some dreadful fashion. Vengeance he considers fun, and plans it with a passion. Time will not erase or blot a plot that he has brewing. It's when you think that he's forgot, he'll conjure your undoing. Bolted doors and windows barred, and guard dogs prowling in the yard, won't protect you in your bed. Nothing will from Pumpkinhead.
I wasn't paying attention. What was all that?
I was just saying you're going to get killed by Pumpkinhead.
Oh, okay.
But for future reference, Pumpkinhead movie producers, that needs to be in every Pumpkinhead movie.
Not like just the thing about like bolted doors.
Oh, yeah. I remember an old nursery rhyme from when I was a kid, guys. Oh, you know, Pumpkinhead, bolted doors and guard dogs or something.
We'll get into it. This movie felt like Saw 2 to the rest of the Saw franchise. I like Saw 2. I think Saw 2 is actually kind of a fun movie. But like, it felt like Saw 2 to the rest of the franchise, where Saw 2 was an idea for a different movie, but Saw was so popular they just slapped the Saw name on top of it.
This feels like a cash-in.
And it feels like it's something different, and they went, well, people know the name Pumpkinhead. That movie was pretty popular. We'll just call it a Pumpkinhead movie.
This is very eerily similar to Halloween 2 for me. It's like John Carpenter was done with Michael Myers. He didn't want to do another one. They're like, please, please, you got to do another one. So he's like, oh, fine, whatever. I guess I'll write this stupid crap for you.
Have you seen the John Carpenter Letterboxd review of Halloween 2?
I have not.
So John Carpenter has Letterboxd now. Hold on, let me see if I can pull it up here. We're doing it live on air.
Doing it live.
All right, hold on, I got it here. So this is John Carpenter's review of Halloween 2 on Letterboxd. They paid me more money than I had ever seen to write a sequel to a film that did not need one. I took the check and spit it on beers to get me drunk enough to plow through this crap. I looked at the final script, which took a whopping 2 days to write, and said, wow, now that's a piece of shit. And it was. I had faith in Rick Rosenthal, and he did not deliver. I suppose I expected him to be a miracle worker, and nobody could have made this work. I don't regret hiring him.
See? Honesty. Yeah. That's why I love John Carpenter. He's not like, oh, this is actually a misunderstood masterpiece, and you guys are all just idiots. No, he's like, this fucking sucked. I knew it sucked when I made it. I did it for the money.
Every day that goes by, I just want Halloween 2. I want the actual Halloween 2. I want the high-rise apartment.
Yeah.
I want you know, the original idea. I don't want this. Now, I think we kind of got close to the idea with Halloween H2O. You know, around you think high-rise apartment, you're like, you could kind of say, well, a dormitory, like, kind of a sort of thing. But, like, oh, man, I really want actual Halloween. I want the original idea for Halloween 2.
But, yes, Pumpkinhead Blood Wings gives me heavy Halloween 2 vibes. It's like a sequel that didn't really need to exist, that nobody really seemed that into, and that Pumpkinhead was honestly not that important to the plot of.
No, you could have just made this a completely different monster, a completely unique thing, with, you know, with a story that's kind of similar to Pumpkinhead, but not Pumpkinhead. And I think it would have been, I think it would have stood on its own merit fairly well, even if I still wouldn't think the movie was great.
It would be a pretty generic story because it is a very generic story. But I mean, yeah, you could have had it be, I mean, just a spoiler a little bit. You could have just been Tommy's ghost that was doing this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. We could actually talk about it. Let's carve the pumpkin, carve the jack-o'-lantern.
Indeed.
Released October 19th, 1994. Hey, great job.
Yes, perfect release window.
Directed by Jeff Burr, who has directed a lot of sequels of horror movies. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, Leatherface, which I it's not everybody's favorite, but I kind of enjoy that one a bit.
It's not terrible.
4 Puppet Master sequels.
I've never seen a Puppet Master, so I got no comment on that.
I don't think I've seen any of the sequels that he's done, but we do have a non-canonical Puppet Master movie on our list.
Okay.
And then also 3 episodes of Big Bad Beetleborgs.
Alrighty.
Which was important to me. Mm-hmm. Written by Ivan and Constantine Chikornik, with additional dialogue by Andrew Osborne and Will Houston with additional material. Larry from Hellraiser, Andrew Robinson, plays Sam Braddock. You might also know him as
Mr. Garrick. Garrick from Deep Space Nine, yeah. One of the best and most interesting characters.
Yeah, we're in Cardassian space. Cardassian space.
Hey, Cardassian space. Oh, no.
I get that. I get that mixed up all the time. There's a famous moment where we were sitting there watching an episode of The Next Generation, I think. I mean, you'll be able to tell me based off of what I say here. And I'm like, and someone was like, oh, what happened to the episode? I was like, Professor Xavier got captured by a Kardashian and there were 4 lights.
Excellent. You sound like a Google review, Jay.
Amy Dolenz plays Jenny, his daughter. She's just an important character. She's actually one of the few people in this movie with very few film credits I saw.
And it's a shame because she was one of the better actors in the movie.
Alexander Polinski plays Paul, and we will hear his voice as Dark Elves in Krampus, the Michael Dougherty movie. We have returns of Lillian Chauvin, who plays Miss Osi, and we last saw her as Mother Superior in Silent Night, Deadly Night 1, slash also in all the flashbacks in Part 2. And we also have a return of Linnea Quigley as Nadine.
You going to talk about Mare Bubba?
I didn't have anything for Mare Bubba.
You didn't? Oh my God, Jay. You missed a huge fact by not looking into Mare Bubba.
Oh, what did I miss?
You know
who
that is? Uh-oh. That's Roger Clinton. That's Bill Clinton's half-brother.
Oh, is it really?
Yes. It's literally the president's brother, Jay.
That's amazing. No, I just completely, I was like, he's not in any Christmas horror movies. I don't need to bring him up.
But yeah.
But more importantly, Linnea Quigley.
That was also his very first movie, by the way.
National treasure, Linnea Quigley. Do you think she and Lillian Chauvin talked about Silent Night, Deadly Night on the set of Pumpkinhead 2, Blood Wings?
I am almost positive they did not.
We'll see her again in Caesar and Otto's Deadly Christmas. And also if we ever do like a July 4th special, we'll see her as Trash in Return of the Living Dead.
You want to know something interesting, Jay?
Uh-huh.
While Bill Clinton's brother was not in another Christmas horror movie, he was in another Christmas movie.
Okay.
Fred Claus.
Oh, boy. R.A. Mihailoff plays Red Byers, and we will see him again as Stuart in Krampus the Devil Returns, a.k.a. Krampus the Christmas Devil 2. And a movie Jeff is very excited to return to.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
Also, Kane Hodder plays Keith Knox. You might know him as a lot of different Jason Voorhees. And my favorite Jason Voorhees, Jason X, Evil, gets an upgrade.
You might also recognize Stephen Connolly, who plays the judge. He was on Dallas, if anybody's a Dallas fan.
I'm not a Dallas fan.
I'm not really a Dallas fan, but I do. I have some appreciation for Dallas.
I always figured the dog JR in Deadly Games, aka Dial Code Santa Claus, was named after JR from Dallas. Hari James plays Nurse, and we will see her again this St. Patrick's Day as a radiation therapist in Maniac Cop 3, Badge of Silence.
Oh, boy.
I could not find any information about money for this movie at all.
The thing I was able to find said that it was produced on a made-for-TV budget of $600,000.
Oh, that tracks.
So, I mean, and it really does feel like a made-for-TV movie.
Here is a thing I did find, though. Lance Henriksen was asked to return, but he turned it down after reading the script and calling it terrible.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. I read that and I went, oh, how bad could it be?
Oh, do you want to know another? Mark McCracken plays Pumpkinhead in the suit in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he also played Swamp Thing, Jay.
Oh, cool.
So I just thought I'd throw that out there because I know you're a Swamp Thing guy.
I am a Swamp Thing guy. Tagline, they couldn't leave dead enough alone.
Well, you know, not a bad tagline.
Yeah. Where to watch? Currently, you have to get a trial of Stars yes. on Amazon for 7 days.
To get a Stars subscription, ladies and gentlemen. That's how far we've fallen.
Yeah, Jeff and I had to activate free trials on Prime so we could watch Pumpkinhead 2, Blood Wings.
It was terrible.
Personal experience, I'd never seen this. I other than knowing that Pumpkinhead 2 existed, I had no knowledge of this movie.
I watched 2.5 Pumpkinhead movies 10 years ago. And that's my experience with Pumpkinhead.
Excellent. Well, you know, that qualifies us as experts enough to talk about Pumpkinhead 2 Blood Wings. Indeed.
But I do know a lot more Pumpkinhead lore than that because he's in a lot of horror bracket lists that I listen to.
There was a video game tie-in to this, I think. Yes, I saw, like SNES.
Yes, it was actually a pretty high production value game.
That might be worth checking out. See if I can find like an actual play or a let's play or whatever of that. Because I think that'd be fun to watch and kind of turn on at least for a little bit and kind of see what it was like.
Yeah.
Anything else, or do you ready to dive into our synopsis?
Time to dive on in.
All right. Right off the bat, we go straight into our title card. I think there's like some red, like it's just our red screen, and then we just get our title card. Pumpkinhead 2, Blood Wings, followed exactly. by opening credits.
What else do you need, Jay? It's Pumpkinhead 2.
We're in black and white, and we are in Farron Woods in 1958. A lady makes, like, some gruel for this boy named Tommy, who has, like, a bunch of deformities and stuff. Mm. And then some greasers pull up, and they pile out of this old, like, classic car like they're a bunch of clowns. Like, there are more guys than it feels like could have fit in that car.
They're 1950s greasers.
They chase Tommy and eventually catch up to him, beating him, stringing him up and cutting him, and then they drop him down a mine shaft. The whole time this is going on, the old lady is also getting attacked, and like she's also feeling the damage of this.
She's feeling the pain, yes.
Which is weird. So like, was she his pumpkin head?
No, I think it's implied that the original pumpkin head had sex with her, and she gave birth to Tommy.
Okay.
I think that's what they're trying to imply. But again, they never address any of this in this movie, so this is not a spoiler. This is just like speculation.
Because that's the thing, later on, they're like, she had no connection to the boy. She just like protected him mm-hmm. because he was the son of Pumpkinhead or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, come on, Lance Henriksen, you can do better than Lillian Chauvin.
They said, even the Pumpkinhead lore masters, I know, Jay, very serious title. They say that this movie is only like very loosely connected to any of the others because the Pumpkinhead lore and this is all over the place.
That was kind of like as I was sitting there, and we'll talk about it at the end. But off the air, even you and I were talking about this, and it's just like this does not track with everything we learned in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not one of those where it's like, oh, this is a sequel, so we're adding to the lore. No, just this stuff directly contradicts things from the first movie.
Literally just the opposite of some of the things they said in the first movie.
We're now in Farron Woods today. We know it's today, 1994, because the movie's now in color.
Exactly.
Sheriff Braddock is getting ready for his first day after moving to Farron Woods from New York City.
New York City.
He's one of them city boys.
Need me a New York lawyer.
His daughter, Jenny, is headed to school but runs into Marcy, Peter, Danny, and a fourth person whose name we later learn is Paul. I was sitting there and I'm like, who the fuck is the other kid? And I made it like an hour in, and then finally it's like, hey, Paulie. And I was like, oh, his name must be Paul.
Fucking Paul. Oh, Jay, you forgot that the judge acts like the most suspicious motherfucker on earth.
He's in the sheriff's office and just being weird as shit. At first I thought he was the mayor because it would have made more sense. No, he's just like telling the sheriff what to do, and he's just the judge getting away with it.
Yep.
The Sheriff Braddock then attends a physical, and we meet Dr. Pettibone, and we learn that she descended from a long line of witch doctors, which I thought would play more into this movie, but did not. I
think it would, yes, if they mentioned it.
I thought it was going to be that, like, that Lillian Chauvin's character, like, dies or whatever. She's in a coma, whatever happens with her. Mm-hmm. And then I was going to be like, oh, they need another witch doctor to, like, help control Pumpkinhead. Nope, none of that happens.
Well, you know, Jay, there actually was a voodoo curse on this movie. Its runtime is only 88 minutes, but it feels like it's 3 hours.
It took me 3 hours to watch it. The mayor stops in with the most permed mullet I've seen in years. He's at the doctor's office, and he just picks up his guitar for his gig that night.
Yeah, that's Mayor Bubba for you, Jay.
And then just warns the sheriff to keep an eye on his daughter.
Well, it's very heavily implied that he is banging the nurse as well.
Oh, is that the implication?
Yeah, when she hands him the guitar, and she like touches his hand on the back.
I was like, what the fuck is it? Like, why is the guitar at the doctor's office?
It's up the usual Clinton stuff, Jay.
And then I thought, like, oh, is he gonna be the bad guy in this movie? No, he's in one other scene and that's it.
He's literally nothing in this movie.
You don't even need him in the movie.
Nah, that's the beauty of Mayor Bubba.
Jenny and the other teens go and hang out at the mine shaft where Tommy got killed.
Of course. You know, wouldn't you?
40 years ago or whatever.
I'm going to swing across there. Did anybody dare me?
If you dare me, I'll give you a kiss. It's essentially what Danny says.
Yep.
And then Jenny doesn't dare him, and then he goes and kisses her anyway, and she clearly doesn't like it.
Then her dad pulls up. Yeah,
her dad pulls up. And they're all smoking pot. And then her dad pulls up, and so they have to ditch the pot. He takes her home, where he makes her promise she isn't going to hang out with those teens anymore.
And it's also a conversation between the sheriff and her mom implies she got in some big trouble back in the city.
Yep. Later that night, she leaves home to go hang out with those teens that she promised her dad she wouldn't go hang out with.
As you do. Jay's hot young teens, he's always looking for.
No, these were far from the hot young teens in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
These are frumpy teens. Jay doesn't like these teens.
They're driving down the road, hanging out. She's hanging out with these teens that she promised her dad she wouldn't hang out with. And so to have a good time, they decide to drive with the headlights off.
Drive crazy down the road, yeah. I think it's implied that Danny's a little drunk.
And because they're doing this, they run over an old lady who is Miss Aussie. O.C. They pronounce it different ways the whole movie.
I was just saying Miss O.C. because that makes more sense to me.
It makes more sense. The thing is, too, is like I even think Lillian Chauvin pronounces her own name different.
Yes.
In like two different scenes.
She does.
You come to Miss Aussie's cabin. You come to Miss O.C.'s cabin.
Well, I mean, they run her over, and, you know, of course, somebody knows the local witch, because, you know, everybody knows that.
Yeah, Marcy's like, oh, that old woman, that's the witch in town.
Yeah. Let's go check out her cabin.
And then Jenny, like, demands that they go see her to make sure she's okay, because they hit her, and then when they, like, turn back around, she's just gone.
Yeah.
They pass by some kind of weird, like, stones in the ground, and Jenny kind of trips over it as they arrive at the cabin. Miss O.C. isn't there, so they light a bunch of candles and, like, snoop around.
Oh, of course, Jay, of course.
Where they, like, and then it's like, oh, she deals with real witchcraft. And, you know, ask Marcy, and Marcy's like, oh, this is well beyond what I know. This isn't Ouija boards. And then immediately, like, Danny's like, what's this? And she's like, oh, that's cursed blood. Yep. And it's like, what's this? Oh, that looks like a page from the Book of Shadows. You said you didn't know anything about witchcraft.
That's devil's blood in the Book of Shadows. Anybody recognize that, Jay?
Miss O.C. shows, oh, and not only does she know it's a page from the Book of Shadows, she knows that it is a spell to raise the dead.
Yep. Well, I mean, you can't read ancient Book of Shadows hieroglyphics, Jay.
Miss O.C. shows up and threatens Danny and the others, but tells Danny he doesn't know what he's messing with, and he hits her, and then steals the vial of blood and they flee literally just out the front door. Miss OC's like, you will die. You all will die. Miss OC curses every one of you to the vengeance of Pumpkinhead. Mm-hmm. They immediately just go back to like that little mound of stones that they saw, which was right outside her cabin, and dig it up.
Well, of course, Jay. I mean, if you have a book page from the Book of Shadows and your devil's blood, you might as well try to raise the dead.
Yep. And so they try to raise the dead, this body in this casket, which we know is Tommy's, but at the time we're just kind of assuming. They dump the blood in the mouth and recite the incantation from the Book of Shadows. And meanwhile, Miss OC accidentally starts a fire and burns down her own cabin.
Yeah, because they show, again, if you know she's a witch and you got serious magic shit around, why would you push her and knock her over?
Right, it makes no sense. And then Pumpkinhead wakes up as they all run away because her house is on fire and no one goes to help her.
Well, I was going to say, they think about going to help her, but they go see the house is on fire and they're like, oh, fuck, we can't do this.
The next day, the sheriff is investigating the fire. We learn that Miss OC is in the hospital, and the sheriff finds claw marks all around the scene of the crime.
Oh, no.
Sheriff Braddock goes and asks Danny about Miss OC, but he denies any involvement, and this is where we learn that Danny's dad is the judge.
Yep.
And that the judge has basically pulled a bunch of strings to keep Danny out of trouble. But you know, this might be one last time. Yeah, this might be the final straw.
This might be too much. Oh, Jay, you want to know something else? You know how they resurrected Pumpkinhead by accident? How does the witch know that Pumpkinhead's been resurrected?
I have no idea.
She's cursing them with Pumpkinhead's vengeance.
Yeah, she curses them before Pumpkinhead has been woken up.
Exactly.
At the hospital, Miss OC has Pumpkinhead visions and mutters that it is happening again, as we see Pumpkinhead string up and butcher Ernst, who's a local farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So he had like a barn, and Pumpkinhead just goes in, ties him up like he's a pig, and then just proceeds to like chop him apart with his Pumpkinhead claws.
Yep.
Pretty great. I love that. I loved that scene. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Well, you know what, Jay? I think that was a wildcat.
That's what the judge says. Dr. Pettibone, Sheriff Braddock, and Judge Dixon, Danny's dad, are investigating the crime scene, and the judge claims that it's a wildcat. Nothing is coming back for revenge.
Yeah, nothing. No pumpkin heads around here. Y'all.
He's like, it's a wildcat. I don't know where you heard about this revenge thing. And everyone's like, no one else was talking about revenge.
Jay and his pumpkin heads all the time with this shit. It's just a wildcat.
Also, they keep finding this like sigil, and it's like a V made with the people's blood.
And also, okay, so he's saying this is a wildcat, which they usually in the South can mean either a cougar or a bobcat.
Or a John Cougar Mellencamp.
Yes, or one of those. None of those things are tall enough to have made the marks that high on the wall.
Or to have strung the guy up.
That is also true, yes. I'm just saying, even if you're just going from the blood wings, which, oh my God, they did the thing.
Yep. They do call them blood wings later on. Yeah. Dr. Pettibone and Sheriff Braddock notice similar claw marks at Ernst's barn, and Dr. Pettibone mentions Pumpkinhead, and then Sheriff Braddock recites part of the poem.
The last line.
He's literally like, oh yeah, I remember a nursery rhyme. Something about dogs and locked doors and watch out for Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, might as well have been that.
But it's supposed to be this like really ominous moment.
Yeah.
We then see Linnea Quigley and Red Byers. They're fucking.
Of course.
As Pumpkinhead approaches and murders Red, as this slow country ballad like plays on the radio, snaps Red's spine in half and then throws him at like Linnea's feet. See, and Linnea screams.
That's one of the things that I don't think this movie is good, but I at least find it entertaining during the kills.
I can agree with that. It must be said, as soon as I saw that there was nudity in the movie and I saw Linnea Quigley was in it, I knew who was going to be topless in the movie. And it was Linnea Quigley.
And we're all grateful for that service.
There was an episode of The Last Drive-In. Oh, last season. I think it was graduation day. And Joe Bob Briggs mentioned that in the movie they had cast all these people. And the girl who was supposed to play a certain role refused to take her top off. And so the director's like, fine, get Linnea. She'll do it. And sure enough, Linnea shows up and is topless in the movie.
Excellent. She's the hero we needed.
Which is just, I think, my favorite Linnea Quigley fact. So the Sheriff Braddock and Dr. Pettibone, they go and investigate. They find, like, a safety deposit box key, and they find more claw marks, and they find the blood wings painted on, like, a bunch of boxes. And then Linnea Quigley, like, runs out. She's been driven mad by whatever she's seen, and they have to, like, drug her to calm her down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last we'll see of Linnea Quigley.
And when the judge finds out about this one, he's not still like, it's a wildcat. He privately, he's like, oh shit, I better call up all my boys.
Yep, the judge assembles a posse to hunt down this wildcat.
Yeah.
Who are we? The Wildcats. And who are we going to beat? The Wildcats.
Exactly.
Oh, also we learn that Ernst and Red used to be friends. They used to know each other and they used to talk a lot, and then something happened after they got out of high school that kind of like drove them apart. And there's also a reference that like Ernst was friends with Judge Dixon at one point.
Yeah.
And like they stopped being friends after high school. Basically they're all the greasers that killed Tommy at the beginning of the movie.
What?
In Red's lockbox, Sheriff Braddock finds a newspaper clippings about Tommy and tells his wife, that while everyone in town was scared of Tommy because they thought he would eat their souls or something like that, that he and Tommy were actually friends. He had saved Tommy's life at one point, but they played together at the entrance to the old mine shaft, and his family moved away before Tommy had died. But it's like ruled a suicide that like Tommy had killed himself at the entrance to the mine. But Sheriff Braddock's like, I don't believe that. I don't believe that would have happened. So he asks Dr. Pettibone to do some investigation at the court, to get the autopsy report, essentially.
No.
She also, while they're talking about that, Dr. Pettibone also mentions that the blood at the scenes does not belong to the victims, is not human. And it's unlike anything she's ever seen before. Almost like it's some kind of pumpkin head.
What? Some kind of pumpkin head?
The teens, minus Jenny, go back to O.C.'s cabin and they find the Pumpkinhead grave empty. Later that night, Pumpkinhead murders some chicken farmers. My favorite one being, like, forces one of the chicken farmers' heads into, like, the coop where the chickens peck his eyes out.
Which is especially cathartic since they are cockfighting. Which is terrible.
Yep. And they've got like
and abusing their deaf mute sister.
Their deaf mute sister. They just go and abuse her the whole time.
One guy's abusing him, and then the other brother's like, hey, knock it off, man. Why you got to do that to her? And he's like, what? I ain't sleeping with her. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was real gross. But yeah, they all get theirs.
This is Jay Logsdon level gross.
Hey, stop that. the sheriff and Dr. Pettibone continue their investigation, and the coroner, they're able to get the coroner report about Tommy. They don't believe he was murdered, and that O.C. was not. This is where they're kind of like, well, O.C. wasn't his mother, but she claimed the body and like protected it.
Mm.
Is kind of what they say. But yeah, we also learned that Tommy was the love child of a pumpkin head and a woman.
Yep.
And so there's even a line, I think, where it's like, well, it doesn't matter who the mother is. Yeah. What's important is that the father was a pumpkin head.
Yeah, but it's like, it doesn't make... The thing for me is, like, it doesn't make any sense for her to be feeling the pain at the beginning if she's not already connected to him.
Right. Well, but also, you know, if she's the old witch, maybe she... Knowing that he's the son of a pumpkin head, maybe she just wanted to have a pumpkin head. Yeah. I don't know. They go to interview O.C. at the hospital, but she's already dead. They go to leave, and the door slams shut, and O.C. sits up and says, it is too late to help the others. That Tommy's dad was a pumpkinhead. This is why Tommy is now a pumpkinhead. And that Tommy was going after the six boys with red wings. And when it is done, it will go after the teens that wronged Miss O.C. Mr. O.C. dies again, and Pumpkinhead screams, which in the lore of the first movie I thought meant that the Pumpkinhead would be dead if the person who summoned Pumpkinhead was dead.
Yes. Well, it's like everybody who summons Pumpkinhead, if they're all dead, because it can be one person or multiple, then Pumpkinhead ceases to exist. But I guess you could argue that the kids are the ones who technically summon Pumpkinhead, and they're still alive. But that also means that it makes no sense for Pumpkinhead to get killed in the way that he does, because he would be invulnerable until he's fulfilled his mission.
Right, because not all the kids die.
Yes.
Which, all right, spoiler, but you guys knew what was coming.
But he's also following his own agenda in getting revenge on the boys that killed him, and then he would be getting revenge for the witch, but the witch didn't summon him. Which also makes no sense.
But then also, why would Pumpkinhead go after the teens that summoned him? Exactly. Why would that be?
Because they would be targeting whoever the kids wanted vengeance for. Because technically, the kids should become the next Pumpkinhead.
Right. Exactly.
They summoned him.
Yeah. No.
None of this makes any sense.
This is all the lore from the first movie. It makes no sense in this movie.
And in Ashes to Ashes, all the lore is restored. Lance Henriksen is restored. Haggis is back. So basically, it's like this thing never happened, kind of like they did with Halloween 2-4.
I think you said that the only reference to this movie in Pumpkinhead 3 is that they're like, oh, if the person who summoned Pumpkinhead dies, then Pumpkinhead can be killed by normal means.
Yes.
Like if dies of natural causes or whatever, yes, I guess.
Or
it's kind
gets
of the
murdered,
assumption.
Whatever. Whoever summoned Pumpkinhead, if they're dead, Pumpkinhead doesn't instantly like drop to the ground dead, but he's vulnerable after that.
The doctor and the sheriff research red wings, which turns out to be, the blood wings or the red wings, which turns up to be the Red Wing Car Club and the sixth member of the car club. It's all five guys who have died. The sixth member is Judge Dixon. He was the leader of the fucking greasers at the beginning of the movie.
Torturer with the knife. Oh my God. And he became a judge.
At a party at Danny's house, he gives Ginny the dad's Red Wing jacket, which I guess is just, I thought was going to play more into the movie, but really doesn't. I think it's more just to be like, hey, remember that?
Sure, that thing?
All the teens except Danny feel bad about OC's death and threaten to go to the sheriff, and Danny punches Paul in the face and then pulls a gun on the other teens.
Of course.
Meanwhile, Pumpkinhead shows up and attacks the judge, defenestrates him, and then kills him with like a blood splatter covering all the walls, and an off-camera, no!
No!
The now hostage teens hear Pumpkinhead. And at gunpoint, Danny forces Paul to go get the car, and Pumpkinhead kills Paul in the car and then throws him into the cabin, and all the other teens flee.
Yep, fucking Paul.
Marcy keeps tripping. Like, I think she trips three separate times.
Yes, it's pretty hilarious.
While getting chased by Pumpkinhead, which allows him time to grab a fence post and impale her with it. And then it turns to Peter, who is yelling like, motherfucker, as the camera cuts to the doctor and the sheriff finding the judge's body and unable to find the teens. The posse also shows up at this moment. Mm-hmm. We cut back to see Pumpkinhead impaling Peter on the same pole as Marcy. Really neat kind of thing where it's like, you know, Peter and Marcy were a couple. And yes. So he like impales them. So they're facing each other. It's like one last embrace kind of thing.
I loved it.
Pumpkinhead appears in front of Jenny and Danny. Danny shoots it, but Pumpkinhead just rips his head off with its bare hands. Pretty great.
Yeah.
Jenny runs to the mine entrance and Pumpkinhead is getting ready to attack her. But the sheriff arrives and is able to stop Pumpkinhead because he and Tommy are friends and Pumpkinhead knows this. Mm-hmm. And that this is Sheriff Braddock's daughter. So Pumpkinhead, you know, realizing that, yes, wants to then protect his friend's daughter.
He saved his life a long time ago when he almost accidentally fell into the mine. And technically, Jenny didn't really have anything to do with hurting Miss Osie, so I guess that's probably why.
Yeah, Pumpkinhead then gets attacked by the posse at the entrance to the mine, in a scene very reminiscent of the first one where Pumpkinhead gets strung up in kind of the same chains as they're shooting him, and then he falls down the mine, and fire erupts out of the shaft that he falls into.
Yeah, he did now.
The next day, Jenny apologizes to her dad for being a piece of shit, and they find the fire truck that the sheriff and Tommy played with it when they were kids. End of movie.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then we get a slow jam about the movie where it's like, you're going to pay the price for Tommy is one of the lines.
Exactly, Jay.
Which, you know, bring back songs about the horror movie that we just watched in the horror movie we just watched.
We need it.
That's the end of the movie. Anything you want to talk about before we get into our categories, Jeff?
No, I think we covered it pretty well.
All right. Well, where do you want to start then?
Well, Jay, why don't we talk about how Halloween-y this movie is?
All right. How Halloween spirit? How Halloween-y is the movie? How Halloween-y are the kills? There is like a jack-o'-lantern blow mold slash ceramic at Red Byers' cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's about the extent of how Halloween-y this movie is.
I mean, other than it being a monster, a creature feature.
With a pumpkin-headed.
Yes, pumpkin head, and there's a witch, so I guess that's pretty Halloween-y.
And it looks, you know, once again, kind of the same thing we said about Third Saturday in October, Part 5. It looks like it is fall.
Yes. So I'm going to give this one a medium.
Yeah, it's a moderate Halloween.
It's not completely out of the Halloween spirit, but I wouldn't say that it's anything like, it's nowhere approaching Trick or Treat level.
But the kills, I mean, we got a fucking monster running around killing a bunch of assholes and teens. It's great.
Yes, we get some great kills in this movie.
I'd say some solid kills. Not, you know, not overly pumpkin themed, although it is Pumpkinhead doing, or not overly Halloween themed, but it is Pumpkinhead doing them. So
I mean,
I'd also give that a moderate, probably.
What was your favorite one?
Ooh, good question. I did enjoy the like snapping Red Byers' spine and throwing him in front of Linnea Quigley, but I think Danny's head getting ripped off was really good.
Mm-hmm. I'm torn between the head getting ripped off and him shoving the head in the chicken coop and the chickens pecking out the eyes.
That one was great too. I think Marcy and Peter when he
the double impale.
Yeah, I think that one's really good.
That is good.
That one might be my favorite. But I think the kills are a step up in this movie from the last one.
Yes, I would agree. The first one does not have much violence in it for a horror movie.
We just get like Pumpkinhead like lifting a motorcycle out of the air, like into the air. Like
Pumpkinhead feels very like animatronic in the first one. Like he can't do a whole lot. Like he's something you'd see on your front lawn at Halloween time.
Right. Yeah, no, this Pumpkinhead feels like much more capable of doing stuff and like using tools and stuff like that. Moving on, Monster Mash, favorite quotes.
Let's do it.
All right. I've been waiting for this.
All right. Do it, Jay.
Hold on. Let me guess. You're the local badasses, right? This is Jenny. Then Danny says, that's right. Then Jenny responds with, well, no offense, but I've seen a lot badder.
Maribaba, greatest character in the movie, Jay. The sheriff's like, I think it's Pumpkinhead. And Maribaba says, let me put it this way. Loch Ness Monster, Abominable Snowman, Bigfoot, that stuff is big business. The way I see it, this thing could put us on the map. Now I got a couple of guys from the National Enquirer all set to, and the sheriff's like, people died here, you know. You do know that, don't you? And Maribaba's like, tragedy, ain't it? Well, so's the budget of this here task.
I mean, I completely get it. It's better than certainly the Merritt Jaws, who's just like, no, there is no shark. He's like, yeah, we got a monster running around. Let's capitalize off of it.
Exactly.
Paul, what the fuck is this? Pet cemetery?
Yep. That was a good one. Miss Aussie pulling a Bob Dole and speaking in the third person in this one. You will die. You all will die. Miss Aussie curses every one of you to the vengeance of Pumpkinhead.
Here's my last one. This is Peter. The power's dead, and so are we.
Yeah, that was a good one. What is it? This is Paul. What is it, Peter? I don't know. Ask Marcy. She knows all about this witch shit. Marcy, don't ask me. This stuff is way beyond Ouija boards. And then, as Jay said, proceeds to like know everything about what's going on.
Right.
My last one is Jenny and Danny on the phone. Jenny's like, look, I gotta go. I'll see you after school tomorrow, all right? And Danny's like, you sure you don't want me to come over there later tonight and tuck you in? Jenny's like, no. And I figured that was going to be the end of it. But then she's like, at least not tonight. And I'm like, see, this is why women complain constantly about how they get with these assholes. This is how it happens.
It is kind of a like step by step of like, yeah, this is kind of how this happens.
Yeah.
Wear them down over time.
That was my last one.
All right. Well, let's move on to Halloween costumes, set designs, costumes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I thought the pumpkin head looked still pretty good in this one.
It's not bad. And it moves better in this one. Like we said,
yeah,
feels more like a living creature.
Well, now that I know that the mayor was Bill Clinton's brother, it makes more sense because my other thing was the mayor's whole vibe.
Yeah. The mayor's vibe is good. I like that vibe.
Wears sunglasses, has a permed like brown mullet, and then like just carries around a guitar for his concerts. And then the second time you see him, he's just like, yeah, I got the National Enquirer on the way for the Pumpkinhead.
The sheriff, I mean, it's weird. It's weird seeing Mr. Garrick without his Cardassian makeup. And it kept throwing me off because he would be doing his same, like, expressions with his eyes and stuff. And I'd be like, wait a minute.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure he doesn't have a mustache in Deep Space. So yeah. he looks so weird in this one.
He does look very weird.
When you're so used to seeing him look a certain way, and then you see him in this one, you're like, what the fuck?
And you know what? I also found it funny that, so the first one, Lance Henriksen, obviously big in a sci-fi franchise. And then they're like, well, we can't get him. What if we get another guy that's big in a sci-fi franchise?
I mean, pretty much. well, all right, let's move on to Burnt Out Jack-O-Lantern, Brilliant Jack-O-Lantern. One thing that we thought they could improve upon, and then one thing we want to praise.
This one was hard, Jay. Very hard, because there's so many things they could have improved upon.
For me, it was how bad, like, the dialogue/line delivery is at times, and I don't really get it, because these are good actors.
Yes.
Like I said, like, most of these people, Soleil Moon Frye is the mom. You know, you've got Mr. Garrick from DS9. You've got Linnea Quigley. You've got all these great actors who some would go on to do lots of stuff. The guy who's the voice of I said was the voice of, like, the Dark Elves in Krampus. That has, like, hundreds of credits on IMDb because, like, just does a bunch of voice acting.
Yeah. No, it's not. I think Lance Henriksen's perspective on the script was correct. It was just a bad script.
And I assume it's also bad direction. It's the director's job to, like, make sure people deliver the line properly, not in, like, a way that's really awkward and kind of stilted. Yes.
A lot of these people felt like they were, like, maybe, like, Lifetime movie actors or something like that. That's what this felt like a little bit.
I kind of agree with you there. It's like they are acting like they are much worse actors than we know they are capable of being.
Yes. So I'm guessing for a lot of these people, it was just the paycheck.
Yeah. Do you have something you want to fix?
Yes. My number one fix was, well, besides the thing I mentioned at the very beginning, the Pumpkinhead poem needs to be in the movie. That is non-negotiable for a Pumpkinhead. I'm sorry. That's one of the core things that makes it spooky.
I agree.
And this movie needed more Pumpkinhead. You get some great kills in this, but they're spaced so far apart when you get some action and see what's going on that it's like, if Pumpkinhead had been in probably even just like 10 more minutes of this movie, I think it would have been a solid, like a monster movie.
You basically know, and I mean, I'll get into that kind of later on for my final rating, but you kind of know what's going to happen because it's going to be like, oh, Pumpkinhead just killed somebody, so now we're going to have a chunk of just people investigating during the day.
We're going to have 10 minutes of the sheriff running around town.
Yep. Oh, now it's night again. Pumpkinhead's going to kill somebody.
Yep. That's literally how the entire movie goes.
The thing I want to praise, my brilliant jack-o'-lantern. It's probably going to be probably the same thing as you picked, Jeff. The Pumpkinhead creature and the gore effects. Pumpkinhead looked pretty solid in this one. Maybe not. I think the costume looked a little worse, but I think it moved a lot better.
Yes. I'd say they definitely, for the record, yes, mine was the same thing. They slimmed. It's kind of like the original Godzilla versus Godzilla Raids Again, if anybody knows the story behind that. So in the original Godzilla, the suit was incredibly heavy, cumbersome, and slow to use. And so it created a good effect, but in the second movie, they wanted to have him fight another monster, and so they had to slim it way down. So people were like, the suit looks a lot cheaper because, you know, it was thinner and easier to move in. But it's like, yes, but then it allows the actor to do a lot more stuff besides just walk slowly along in the suit.
Right.
And it's like the same thing with the Pumpkinhead movies. It's like, in this, Pumpkinhead is a lot more active, does a lot more interesting kills. That's only possible because the prop was scaled down and the suit was made to a manageable level where a guy could actually move around in it.
Yep. Because the last, like we said, for the last one, for Pumpkinhead 1, which I know was a year ago, You know, the special effects guy in that one was also the guy who did, like, Jurassic Park.
Yes.
So he's used to doing these big budget, like, massive...
Yes, and big slow-moving creatures that look like they got big weight behind their movements and everything, which is okay, like we said, but it also severely limits what you can do kill-wise.
Yeah, where this one, yeah, the suit feels a lot lighter. It feels, you know, the pumpkin head feels like can do a lot more.
He feels more like a dangerous creature and less like a lumbering behemoth-type creature.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, or are you ready to move on to final rating?
I think we can rate this thing.
All right. Well, every episode of Horror for the Holidays, Halloween Spooktacular edition.
The 2024 Horror for the Holidays Halloween Spooktacular, Jay?
Yeah, that one. Okay. Every Halloween Spooktacular episode, we rate our movie on one of three categories. Is it, candy corny? Is it seasonally spooky? Or is it 6 feet under? Jeff, take us away.
This one is getting a candy corny for me. It was teetering right on the edge of being 6 feet under because I really do not like certain parts of this movie because they feel interminably long and drag. But there's enough. Even though the line deliveries are bad, there's still some funny lines. Like, I mean, Mayor Bubba's lines, even though he's only got a few of them, are very funny.
Right.
Some of the weird deliveries can be, like, not really charming, but, like, kind of like funnily endearing, I guess. Like, Mr. Garrick is trying. He's trying his best to make some of these really dumb lines sound like they're important. And that kind of gives you some of that. It's kind of what Joe Bob, see, there's bad, bad movies, then there's bad, bad, good movies. This is more along that line. It's still bad. The dialogue's bad. The movie itself is bad, but it's entertaining enough that I'm not going to put it 6 feet under.
Well, I'm going to put it 6 feet under.
I figured you would.
I could, first off, I can understand why Lance Henriksen said the script was terrible. This movie sucked.
Yes.
Like, it was boring as shit. It took me 3 hours to finish a movie that wasn't even an hour and a half. Just clocked in just under an hour and a half. The movie was boring, and the good actors weren't really used to their full potential. Like I said, I think that is at the feet of the director.
Yeah.
The story was very formulaic and by the numbers. I really felt you could just kind of tell what was going to happen next, before it happened. Like I said, oh, Pumpkinhead killed somebody. Now it's time for the actual story of the movie. Okay, back to it's nighttime again. Pumpkinhead's gonna kill somebody. Oh, now we have to investigate that and do more research. Even though the whole time you're kind of sitting there being like, "It's Tommy. We know it's Tommy."
Like I was saying earlier, this could have had no Pumpkinhead at all because he feels just like a footnote in the movie. And it could have just been like a Lifetime original movie where a bunch of assholes in the 50s beat up this deformed kid, accidentally killed him or whatever. And then his ghost comes back to get revenge on them in their adult lives.
No, it really feels like it could have been like a sci-fi original or something like that.
Like, it's not, it's nothing like, you could take Pumpkinhead completely out of this movie, have the exact same story, and it would basically feel like it wasn't missing anything.
Also, like we said, doesn't really follow the pre-established lore from Pumpkinhead from the first movie. It really felt like they, like I said, like they just kind of had this idea. And when, you know what worked? Pumpkinhead. We'll just kind of slap Pumpkinhead's lore on top of this. That doesn't fit exactly. We'll just make it work for what we need it to do.
I mean, the one thing that was good about this being a movie versus like a Lifetime type TV movie was if it had been one of those, then all the kills and stuff would have taken place off screen.
I will say a thing you and I complained about in Third Saturday in October Part 5, which is also a 90s sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, boy, those weird just hard cuts we got in this. Mm-hmm. No hard cuts in this movie.
Yeah, weird, right?
Like, it's like, boy, almost like it was just a poorly made film with bad editing choices.
Yeah.
Not, you know, oh, you guys don't know what you're talking about for 90s horror. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is what all 90s horror movies were like. Mm. It's like we literally followed up with a 90s horror movie and it was nothing like.
Yeah, absolutely nothing like. Even one that's on a similar vein, because Third Saturday in October is just doing some guy walking around killing everybody. That's literally what this movie is, too.
Like, almost retroactively, I know I said Third Saturday October Part 5 was probably on the edge.
Mm.
Put it 6 feet under. It's worse. It's worse than this movie. Like, yeah. other than the pepperoni shortage, like, yeah. there's very little to keep that movie in candy corny. That movie belongs right with this movie.
Big Willie.
Oh, yeah, and Big Willie.
Big Willie is the only thing that pushed it into funny territory.
You're right. Yeah, I forgot all about Big Willie Nathan, and it's only been a week.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, Jeff, just stop to think that maybe there's some razor blades in this candy.
You know, Jay, my tongue is bleeding profusely, so I think there might be.
Maybe we don't know what we're talking about.
I mean, I can almost guarantee we don't know what we're talking about, Jay.
All right.
There's got to be, you know, all the keyboard reviewing warriors on Reddit, Jay, they know what's up. Just like how John Carpenter's a pile of shit and Aliens is actually a terrible sequel. This is actually amazing.
The first one I want to do, I've got two selected. This one is a 5 out of 10. And I know what you're thinking, listener. Like, 5 out of 10, that's not that bad. Let me get into this review and then we'll kind of talk about it at the end. 5 out of 10, pleasantly surprised. While easily falling into the category of B-horror, this isn't nearly as horrible as I expected. After reading many reviews on IMDb and elsewhere that were scathingly negative about this sequel, I figured I'd try it out since I enjoy the original and Lance Henriksen. Well, I'm sorry that you were sorely disappointed, certainly by the second thing. And of course, I had to see if the bad reviews were accurate. Very fortunately, and here's the upside going in with low expectations, this film pleasantly surprised me. Not as good as the original, not incredibly connected to the original. However, it does what it sets out to do quite well. As far as Pumpkinhead sequels go, this is one to check out. I wish I had anything complimentary to say about Volume 3 in this series. However, that's pure crap. Stay away. And what a waste of both Lance Henriksen and Doug Bradley. But I digress. Blood Wings isn't a great movie. By any means, but although he put by movie my any means, but fans of horror know that you must judge horror movies far differently from films outside the genre. And as far as the horror movies go, I find this to be extremely underrated. But tastes are like assholes, so give it a whirl and post your own. And I something about it where I'm like, so you're acknowledging that, like, you know, a thing you and I have even said, like, we don't judge all movies the same.
Yeah.
You know, but you gave this movie a 5 out of 10, but then you're saying, like, it's great, blah, blah, blah. Well, if you're acknowledging that we don't judge horror movies the same as we judge other films, then you should have given this a 10 out of 10 because, or at least certainly better than a 5 out of 10, because you're acknowledging that, you know, we judge things differently. So, and so that's why I kind of thought, like, even though it's a 5 out of 10, it feels like you're actually praising it more than a 5 out of 10 movie.
Which I do. I don't even judge movies based on, like, their genre or anything like that. I judge strictly on entertainment value. Was this a good, did this feel like a good productive use of my time or not? That's generally how I rate movies.
No, I think off the air, you and I were kind of talking about that. We're talking about that together. We were kind of like, if we judged movies like by the same criteria every single time, you know, all, you know, big studio blockbusters would all be hits, or would all be these popular movies, and we'd be sitting there being like, anything indie made is bad because it doesn't have the budget. Anything made before X year is bad because it doesn't have the budget. And it's like, no, we acknowledge that we watch these movies and go in and, like, and view them differently, but it's not just because it's horror movies. We look at, like, how much we enjoyed them, and if we enjoyed the movie more, you know, Mother Krampus 2 Sleigh Ride, we genuinely enjoyed that movie, even though it wasn't great, like, by all means, but we had fun, and that's, yeah, you know, that's really what's important.
It's crazy, Jay. I think entertainment should be entertaining, and if it's not, I say it's bad, and if it is, I say it's good.
Yep.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, you got one?
Oh, I got one, Jay. 5 stars. Living with the choices made. I liked all the sequels to Pumpkinhead. I liked the settings and the plots. One sequel leads right into the next. I would recommend one sequel leads right into the next. I would recommend all the sequels to Pumpkinhead. This one kept me on the edge of my seat and trying to figure out what was going to happen next. No. Did you watch this? Is this the right movie? Are you doing another one of those posting a Snyder Cut review on the Avengers?
all these, you know, one movie leads into another. Literally, they don't follow the lore from one movie to the next.
You want another 5-star red real quick, Jay?
I was going to say, I've got a 10 out of 10.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
This review is 10 out of 10. Pumpkinhead Blood Wings. Hey, they're just the name of the movie.
Nice.
I think Pumpkinhead 2 is a great sequel to Pumpkinhead. The first one is still great, but this one had a bit more gore, which I agree.
Yes.
The acting was okay. I'd say it was a little worse than okay. Mm-hmm. Andrew Robinson was good, and I enjoyed his performance, even in Dirty Harry and Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Pumpkinhead looks the same, but the suit isn't as realistic as the first, but it still looks cool. I think this is, you know, this is a thing where we're like, I think it moves better, but you lose some of the realism with that.
Yeah.
Haggis is different from the first film, but that makes up for but the makeup for the character is still good. They are different characters. Yes. This is Miss O.C., yes, not Haggis.
Not Haggis.
Jeff Burr, who directed Puppet Master 4, Puppet Master 5, The Final Chapter, and Leatherface, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, directs Pumpkinhead 2 and does a good job of it. Well, that's up for debate.
Yeah.
Pumpkinhead 2, Blood Wings, may not be for all, but this is a good film with some nice gore in part. I think what killed me was but this is a good film.
Yeah. A great film. 5 stars, Jay. Scary as heck.
Oh boy.
You want to know what the one line review of this scary as heck?
Yeah.
Better than the first in the series.
Jesus Christ.
God, I love fucking public reviews.
I wasn't even a huge fan of the first one. I liked it. No. I liked it a bit, but I wasn't a huge fan.
Pumpkinhead does not hold like I'm like, oh my God, I love Pumpkinhead so much. Pumpkinhead is like an entertaining movie to watch like around Halloween time. I'm not saying it's like an amazing movie or anything like that. I just find it interesting. And I think Lance Henriksen's performance in the first one was really good.
No, I think he does great. And Haggis is awesome.
Yes, Haggis is one of the most genuinely creepy witches, I think, ever.
As much as I love Lillian Chauvin, no, I'd rather have just had Haggis in this movie.
Yes.
Not Miss O.C.
5 stars, Jay. Just a good old school spook flick. No computer animation, just a storyline, makeup artists, and creature creators. If you like that style, then Pumpkinhead 2 is right up your alley.
Hey, I mean, I kind of agree with that.
I'd say I can't find anything to disagree with. I just wouldn't have given it 5 stars.
the fact that the movie kind of drags and feels much longer than its hour and 84-minute runtime or whatever.
This one... from John's Horror Corner on Amazon. He fell pretty much in line with us, I would say. Well, at least with me. I know Jay would probably rate it a little bit lower.
Also, I said hour and 84 minutes, which which is kind of what the movie felt like. 84-minute runtime.
So John's Horror Corner said, a decently entertaining, ill-written and acted and directed B-movie sequel, but an unworthy comparison to the 88 original. Anyone seeking a worthy follow-up to Pumpkinhead will surely be disappointed, but adventures in a search of a worthy B-movie or a silly, scary movie date night will find an entertaining evening. Some people dread sequels. This one is not that bad.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that. I wasn't as big a fan, but I can kind of agree with where they're coming from.
That's kind of where I fall on it. It's like, I wouldn't... Like, there's definitely other movies. Like, if it's a choice between this and Krampus the Christmas Devil, or, like, throwing on even, like, Halloween 2 or the third Saturday in October Part 5, I think I would rather watch this.
I think I probably would, too.
Yeah.
I mean, for one, you get Linnea Quigley, so you know what you're going to get there.
I mean, you get some stuff. Let's just say that. It's not one of these movies, you know, it's not a Trapped Alive, where you're waiting for the fucking cave creature the entire time and it just never happens. You get Pumpkinhead killing people in some brutal and creative ways.
Yeah. Would we have liked more Pumpkinhead? Yes. But
you do get some. You get some creative kills. You get some funny lines. I mean, you get a topless woman, what every horror movie needs.
But more importantly, you get topless Linnea Quigley, yes. What every horror movie has.
Yes.
I don't think Linnea listens, but if she does, we love you, Linnea. You're great.
Yes. Keep doing your public service.
Jeff, let's take Pumpkinhead and see if we can move Pumpkinhead around anywhere on our trick-or-treat list.
I mean, I guess it really depends on the Pumpkinhead lore you're going with.
I assume just kind of hold steady. Like, at this point, we're not really established in Thorn Rune Michael Myers. I don't think we added... I thought with the name Blood Wings, it was going to mean that Pumpkinhead could fly now.
They fly now?
Pumpkinheads fly now?
They fly now.
I really thought that's what it was going to be, and I was kind of disappointed we didn't get Flying Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, man, that sucks.
But I was kind of hoping that's what was where it was going to go. I was going to be like, oh, that might make Pumpkinhead more powerful, more formidable when, you know, eventually Michael Myers does get, you know, his superpower boost from the Thorn Rune.
Yep.
But as of right now, Pumpkinhead probably holds in the same spot. We're at Halloween 2, Michael Myers currently. Sam is, you know, the spirit of Halloween incarnate. Pumpkinhead can't defeat a thing that literally comes back every October.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything kind of holds where it is.
Pumpkinhead's pretty much in the class of all great horror movie antagonists, and it's that he's never truly defeated. He's always got a way to come back. I mean, the same thing, like, yeah, Sam can always come back. Like Jason, Freddy, Michael, they always come back. So, I mean, at the end of the day, his physical capabilities in this, I would say, like, in a straight-up fight, if it was just 1v1, he would probably kill anybody on the list, I think, unless you could think of somebody he couldn't take.
I mean, yeah. Like we said, other than Sam, which is just an immortal being.
He could probably kill Sam, but he would just be back.
Yeah, it just wouldn't matter.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he gets pretty fucked up by an old guy with a gun. So, yeah.
But it just doesn't matter. Yeah, Sam just comes back next year.
So, but yeah, I think, like, if we're talking the throwdown, a one-on-one Deadliest Warrior style situation.
Oh, yeah,
situation,
no, I think Pumpkinhead would win, just loses the long game.
Pumpkinhead has some serious physical advantages over most of our list people.
Oh, like, Sam's kind of in his own category.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the spirit of all Halloween, obviously, you can't kill a spirit.
No, good point. You can't kill Spirit Halloween.
Yes.
Although people may try.
Yes, they try. They try every year. It always comes back.
Especially that one close to us. They keep hiring that weird guy who just talks about Christmas horror movies all the time.
Yeah, when people tell him that Spirit Halloween's gonna die, he's like, "What is dead may never die. It rises again, harder and spookier,
and more spooktacular-y."
Yeah.
Anyway, Jeff, we're winding down the spooktacular here, but that doesn't mean we're without candy in a segment we like to call
Garbage Day.
Huh? No.
All right. Well, I am starting to run out of stuff. I think we decided for our last episode, we're probably just going to do the Burger King Wednesday meal. So you guys have that to look forward to. But before that, I do have some stuff today and some stuff for next week.
Oh, okay.
Jeff?
You got nerds rope?
I got some spooky nerds rope.
Ooh, spooky.
And then on the off chance that they are different, I also got spooky nerds gummy clusters.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I love those gummy clusters.
They are so good.
I know. Weird.
I also got Mike and Ike Sour Spooky Treats.
Ooh.
Which, look at that great packaging.
That is a great package.
You got a bunch of pumpkins, bunch of jack-o'-lanterns gathered around a cauldron. One of them has a witch's hat on. You got some bats in the background. Great package.
Did you see that reverse pumpkin on the back? A jack-o'-lantern's black.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that is awesome.
So we got Sour Ghoulish Grape, Sour Orange Scream, and Sour Wicked Watermelon.
And then to wash it all down with.
Oh, God.
Voodoo 6 or whatever.
Ah. Oh, God, it's so voodoo-y.
Do you know what it is yet? Have you had that spoiled for you?
I have not had the flavor spoiled.
All right. I'll let you know what... I don't know that it's official yet, but I will let you know what the rumor is and what kind of... But we'll try it first.
Okay. All right.
Voodoo first. Already I can tell it smells great. It smells very fruity.
Mm-hmm.
You got your voodoo reaper guy. He's got a kind of a six in his hand. Has a same kind of voodoo guy, purple label this year. Has a bunch of like planets in alignment and maybe some tentacles in the background.
Yeah, pretty spooky.
The Mohawked mummy from last year does not make a return, which is sad.
Sad, very sad. I don't know. The flavor is kind of hard to pin down.
It's one of those, the first time I tried it, I was like, I know I've had this before.
It tastes familiar, yes, but I can't put my finger on what exactly that flavor is.
And this time now, like, now that I'm kind of knowing what it, you know, kind of the same thing last year, where I was you know, I was sitting there. I was like, I know I've tasted this before. And then eventually it hit me. I was like, oh, it's Cherry Airheads. That was last year's. This guy, I'm sitting here and I'm like, I know what this is. I know what I've tasted. I know I've tasted this. And I don't think it's been confirmed yet. It might, they might have actually revealed it. But the rumor is, and people are going off of this based off of something that Mountain Dew did. Like, they made a reply to one of their tweets private. Or like a hidden reply or whatever. And somebody said, it's pink Starbursts. And that is the only reply that they have hidden. Which, when you keep that in mind, it tastes like pink Starbursts.
Definitely Starburst, yeah.
All that to say, I still miss Voodoo from 2 years ago when it was the sour candy. That was the best one.
My wife misses that one too.
All right, let's do some junk food.
Let's do some ropes. Jay's over here shooting ropes.
You beat me to it. I was going to make that joke.
I knew you were, because hashtag Jay Logsdon is gross now for some reason.
Nerds Rope Spooky Edition. It's orange, yellow, purple. Then it's got the rope in the middle. Is it going to... Here are the two big questions. Is the Nerds Rope going to taste any different from the Nerds Gummy Clusters? The follow-up question is it going to taste any different from regular Nerds Gummy Clusters or regular Nerds Rope?
Good questions. So far, no. But it does look spooky.
I do love the colors. I love that they got Halloween Nerds on there.
Nice bright orange packaging. I mean, they're good. I mean, it's Nerds, but... I can't really tell any difference from a normal Nerds Rope, really.
No, I agree. I don't know that there's anything spectacularly different about this. It tastes great, but it's kind of like last week. I did try one of the Reese's Werewolf tracks again after we were done recording, and I did get a little bit more vanilla flavor the second time. But I was like, it's kind of the same thing with some of the other stuff where we're like, all you're doing is slapping a spooky label on it. It tastes the same.
Tear and share. They're telling me I need to share my Nerds Rope.
No, you don't need to.
Good Lord.
Hey, fatties, how about you share?
it's like Nerds are not even like a high calorie candy. You eat like a fistful of Nerds for like 90 calories.
So the Nerds Gummy Cluster bag, very similar to their Nerds Rope. Orange, you know, you got, it says spooky. You've got a white nerd wearing a witch's hat, and then you got an orange and a purple nerd. Opening it up smells way better than the Nerd's Rope.
Yeah, you're right. Way more flavor. Way more fruit smell.
Nerd's Gummy Clusters have been a big hit in my house in the last year.
I love them. Which is weird, because I think all they are just Nerd's Ropes chopped up.
But they taste so much better than just a Nerd's Rope.
Yes, I don't know why, but they taste a lot better. So do these. These have a lot more flavor. Still look like spooky Halloween Nerds. Honestly, you know what it kind of reminds me of with the orange and white like that? If you took out the purple, it'd be candy corn almost.
Yep. Doesn't taste like candy corn, but yeah, got the colors right.
Yeah, big fan.
Oh, I think those were really tasty. I
enjoyed them.
I don't know that they're any different than the Nerds Rope. Like you said, they're probably just Nerds Rope chopped up.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, they're pretty flavorful. They've got a lot more of that kind of fruity flavor you expect.
Yep. I like them. Not, like I said, nothing particularly Halloween-y about it, but I mean, it's Nerds. It's good.
That packaging is almost too pretty to rip open, Jeff.
I know. All right. Oh my God, it's giving me all purple. The hell's going on?
It looks like you got a green one sticking out of the top. But
I think I got one of each now. All right, let's try this wicked watermelon.
I love opening it up. Because they're the sour Mike and X, they've got kind of that like less translucent hue. They're more cloudy, and I love. Just opening up this package and looking at it. It looks so pleasing.
It does.
Mike and Ike's fans will know what we're talking about. Yeah, we're not crazy.
Real Mike and Ike's heads. This one's for you. Let's do Wicked Watermelon first.
Is that the green one?
Yep. That's good. Get that big burst of watermelon flavor.
That's really good and very sour.
Mm-hmm. They weren't kidding.
Like, it's not one of those where it's like prohibitively sour, where you kind of like, where you don't want to eat it because it's so sour. It's just, it's got that sour flavor, yes. And then it's got that watermelon taste.
It's got a bite.
Yep. Orange Next, whatever that is.
That was Orange Scream.
All right. And then Ghoulish Grape at the end.
Orange is good. Still got that sour bite. Good orange flavor.
I think the orange is more overpowering than the watermelon, which is very surprising.
Mm. All right, let's wash it all down with some Ghoulish Grape.
All right. That's the best one.
Yep.
That is hands down the best one.
Surprisingly the most mild, too.
Yep. But I, you know, it's eating a sour Jolly Joe, essentially. Like, I love Jolly Joes. I think that's my favorite, probably my favorite Mike and Ike varietal.
Mm.
is the Jolly Joe. And that is really good with the sour, but then the grape flavor. That is really, really tasty.
I like it. Mike and Ike's big hit. Great packaging. Good flavor.
Well, you ready to do blah, blah, blah. Are you ready to do some ratings?
I am.
All right.
You wanted to go from the bottom or the top?
Let's start at the bottom.
Okay, Voodoo.
Oh, I was going to say Nerd's Rope.
Oh.
Voodoo's probably my second bottom, but...
Jay Logston's got a lot of bottoms.
But no, the Nerd's Rope, it didn't really taste like much. You know, the packaging is the same, but if we're comparing Nerd's Rope to Nerd's Gummy Clusters, Nerd's Rope is worse than Nerd's Gummy Clusters.
That's true.
With the same packaging.
Yep. You know what? I'll change. I'll do Nerd's Rope bottom and then Voodoo number four.
Yeah, I think I'm with you right there. Yeah. It's Voodoo. You know, I thought last year's Voodoo was solid. I liked the Cherry Airheads, even though I really liked the Sour Candy. And, you know, the Sour Candy one was great. This is just, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. What do you think? I'm going to go Gummy Clusters next, I think.
I am too, yeah. I think those Mike and Ike's are a clear winner. Yeah,
I think they're the best thing we've tasted.
They might be my favorite thing we've done so far on the entire podcast.
I could see that.
Maybe those Beetlejuice cookies. Those were really good, too.
Those were good.
But I think it's somewhere. I think for me, it's one of those two have been kind of my big.
But I mean, sorry to Mountain Dew, but they got beat by Coke again.
Yep.
Because the Beetlejuice Fanta was better than this Voodoo.
No, it's like I said, it very much. I think once you kind of know it's strawberry, it's pink Starbursts. Like, you really get that flavor, especially if you let it cool down a little bit. Like, I guess warm up a little bit, as we like to say, where, you know, something about a cold Mountain Dew just kind of doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
You get that pink Mountain Dew kind of coming through, because I let these sit out for a little bit, and it, you know, it really does kind of taste good, but it's just not as good as recent years. And
you know, it's really not that special of a flavor, and it's really not for me, because my wife loves those Starburst waters. Have you seen those?
Yes.
Yeah, that tastes pretty much just like the strawberry one.
Speaking of Voodoo and kind of our disappointment, we'll have more to be disappointed about, because apparently next year Mountain Dew is not doing Voodoo. They are doing something that is Voodoo adjacent, is the rumor.
Well, we'll see. Maybe they'll shake it up and do something cool.
Yeah. So we were kind of, there were people kind of like hypothesizing what that could mean. I mean, you know, we're never going to get Cobra Cane at this rate. So, you know, we gotta take our small victories where we can get them. But I was wondering, like, maybe is it going to be, I mean, are they going to kind of try and do the Beetlejuice thing? Or are they going to try and do like a candy apple flavor?
Honestly, you know what they should figure out what the biggest horror movie coming out around that time is, and do some kind of tie in with that.
That would be a really smart move.
So they need to, because I don't know if you saw or not, but Pepsi has actually fallen to number three behind Dr. Pepper now.
That's wild.
So they need to do something to regain some ground.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what happens when you promise Cobra Cane and then you don't deliver.
Well, because Dr. Pepper's getting so crazy with their flavors. I don't know if you, did you try the coconut cream soda?
Yeah, oh, we tried it on the podcast, yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, we did.
No, it was so good.
It was so good.
And I've heard there's another one coming out, has come out. I've not gotten to try it if it is out, but whatever it was, it sounded like it was going to be really, really good.
Well, supposedly they're doing a special one for the Christmas season, so we'll have to wait and see what it's going
to
be.
Oh, well, we'll have to check that out. Yeah. on a upcoming garbage day.
But yeah, that's to say, Mountain Dew and Pepsi, you need to up your game.
Yeah,
can't, this just ain't doing it.
Or you know, all Pepsi would have to do, I think, for a lot of people, is like bring back like the Sprite Cranberry, or the not the Sprite Cranberry, the like the Sierra Mist like Cranberry Fusion or whatever it was called.
Okay.
Or the there was like a holiday Pepsi. Mm. My famous story is I was eighth grade, seventh or eighth grade. We had a vending machine, and I had brought like $1.50 with me so I could get a pop out of there. Mm. And I thought I was getting a wild cherry Pepsi, and I was instead getting a holiday spice Pepsi. And I was so disappointed because I didn't know what I had done, and I was like, I was all upset. It was on me. It was my mistake. But I never wanted to try it again because I was so mad at it for that one time. But as time has gone by, I'm like, it was pretty good. I would like to try it again, but it doesn't exist anymore. Bring that back.
I've got a free idea. Any PepsiCo executives that are listening, this will get you guys back on top of the Halloween game. So you already make so many brightly colored, interesting looking Mountain Dews. I mean, we've got blue, we got pink, we got orange, we got the standard one. Just at Halloween time, put all the different Mountain Dew flavors that you already make in like potion shaped bottles.
Ooh.
Do round bottles with like a stopper on top for the cap. And just sell like Mountain Dew potions in the month of October.
That would be really cool.
And everyone would buy the shit out of that.
Oh, I think they absolutely would. Yeah. No, that's a great idea, Jeff.
There you go. You can pass Dr. Pepper again. You're welcome.
Well, anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, tell us about how bad the podcast is. Tell us about, ask us some questions. Keep us from meeting into the microphones. Send us an email, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com. Get in touch with us on social media. Our handle at all the places is @horrorforholidays. That's horror, the number four, holidays.
YouTube.com/horrorfortheholidays. Subscribe, hit the bell, leave us comments. 5 stars, Jeff and Jay Fat.
Jeff and Jay, keep eating into the microphone.
Keep eating into the microphone. We love it so much.
It's the best. We're not being sarcastic.
But yeah, I mean, let's get real. And also on any podcatcher you choose to listen to us on, leave us a 5-star review because we ain't reading any of the other ones.
Right. Yeah, those are the only ones we pay attention to.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Forgot to mention on the last one, we are part of the Christmas Podcast Network. We are currently fundraising for the Red Sled Foundation.
Yes.
There's a Kringle Crew ornament. It is in our bio on Instagram. So if you want to sign up and get a Kringle Crew ornament, hit us up there. Grab one. I think it's $25, and all proceeds go to the Red Sled Foundation. Help
Jeff and Jay sent you.
Yeah, tell them Jeff and Jay and Large Marge sent you. Large Jeff and Large Jay sent you.
I was going to say very large Jeff sent you.
It was a sound like Jeff's Kia Soul falling off the top of the Empire State Building. And when they pulled his body from the wreckage, he looked exactly the same.
All right, well, I think we survived another episode of the 2024 Horror for the Holidays Halloween Spooktacular, Jay.
Yeah, we absolutely did. And you know what? It's getting to be about that time. We're recording this on Thursday, the 10th of October. We got to be getting out of here so we can watch a little Christmas horror movie coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Little Terrifier 3.
Ooh.
And we might be in your podcatchers again soon talking about Terrifier 3.
Might do a little thing.
But next week for the Spooktacular, we'll be in your ears talking about Terrifier 1. Will Jay survive the experience? We'll see.
We'll see. Well, the most important thing is, will Jay be able to go back to Terrifier 1 after seeing the glory of Terrifier 3?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Because, see, that was my problem. After seeing Terrifier 2, I was like, well, how can I go back to Terrifier 1 now? Because it just keeps getting better.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm ready to do this. So we're going to head out. We'll see you again next week. Like we said, Terrifier. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.
In the crib, late at night, monsters grooving, what a fright. The goblin says, oh so grand, with vampires leading the band. Dracula waltz with groove in the blow. It was a happening monster show. They did the monster mash at
he was a graveyard smash. Got on in a flash.